Thank you, Keith. Isn't debugging the best topic at 9 a.m.? And effectively, for some of us, it's actually 6 a.m., so hopefully I get my name right, at least. So my name is Liang from University of Washington. In this work, we propose Audit, which is a new debugging tool for troubleshooting transiently recurring problems in the cloud, in production, with the technique of blame proportional logging. So this work is in collaboration with Microsoft Research. As we all know, modern cloud applications are very complex for several reasons. First, it consists of many layers, from data access all the way up to application logic, and all of them can cause problems. The second is the wide use of third-party components that we have little or no control of. So if those components go wrong, it's very hard for us to figure out what's going on. The third is that we know these applications are hosted in shared environments where performance, interference, and occasional infrastructure hiccups can happen, so leading to transient problems. So the result is that despite tremendous effort of testing, SLO violations, exceptions, and crashes are not uncommon in this application. So these all is called out for a login system that understands and adapts to the cloud. The developers and operators usually turn to logging for help when problem occurs, as logging is one of the most widely used technique in troubleshooting problems. But as the community already knows, logging itself is very hard to downwrite. The reason is that logging has an inherent trade-off between log utility and runtime overhead. To better understand this, let's take an example of what we do in production and in testing. So in production, we opt for high performance, so we turn to log little, sacrificing log utility for performance. Unfortunately, most of the logs generated today is actually irrelevant when it comes to root causing problems. On the other extreme, in testing, we kind of ignore runtime overhead. We want a maximum log utility, so we log everything. Now the question really is, can we have the best of both worlds? Can we bring both high efficiency in runtime and high log utility at the same time? So this work, we propose Audit, which translates to automatic drill down with dynamic instrumentation and trigger. So our strategy on a very high level is to actually use a dynamic logging. The art of dynamic logging really comes to answering two key questions. The first is when to log, or more importantly, when not to log. So Audit's answer to this question is that we want to log right after a problem occurs. So problems are detected in Audit using developer-specified triggers, which we'll talk about soon. The idea behind this is that many problems in the cloud are actually transiently recurring, meaning that they occur rarely, but when they do, they're gonna come back soon. They're gonna recur for a short period of time. So with this insight, we can actually start logging when they first show up. And the second time they're there, we are ready to collect information about them. Just to give some concrete examples to understand what this means, transiently recurring problems include network hardware issues, malformed user inputs, load balancers taking some time to kick in, your neck and back pain. Now, the second key challenge of dynamic logging is to understand where in the code should we start logging. So Audit's strategy aims for highly blamed methods that are causally related to misbehaving requests. This is because we figure out most of the time the root cause is kind of localized to a request. So we want to find methods that are causally related to a misbehaving request. Another insight is that sometimes, or most of the time, the root cause involves only a small set of methods. It's not like everything you collect. So we kind of need, so these actually ask for what we call blame proportional logging, asking for some form of causal tracing and some other forms of a metric to actually rank the method by their likelihood or by their blame of becoming the culprit or the root cause of the problem. Next challenge is that we need some form of, or some ability to actually turn logging on and off, and this is simply solved by dynamic instrumentation. So here is an audit highlight. So we present audit's timeline to better appreciate or understand audit strategy in action. So audit operates in different phases. It starts in what we call an always-on monitoring phase, where audit is doing continuous causal tracing. So in this phase, the developers will set up a few triggers that targets at misbehaviors. If something goes wrong, hopefully one of the triggers will get fired, and audit will use the information it collected in the always-on triggering phase to figure out only a small set of methods to enter what we call a detailed logging phase that happens only for a very small time window and at only a few code places. So it is exactly at this step that audit reflects its strategy of doing blame proportional logging. After that, audit will just revert back to always-on monitoring. So when the developer comes online sometime later, they can see the log and work on the problem right away. So as you can see, in this entire life cycle of audit, other than setting up a few triggers, the developers does not need to be involved. The end product is that we can have a push button tool with no knowledge or required changes to code. So audit is simply activated by starting or setting a few environment variables. Audit is quite useful for production as it has negligible overhead during normal operation, and it's quite effective as we're being able to find previously unseen bugs in many production systems. Okay, now let's take a deeper dive at each of the components that supports audit strategy. We'll start with the key to the answer of when to log. As we mentioned, audit will use triggers to define what it means for applications to go wrong. So the developers will use audit to define a set of target misbehaviors. Problems are also detected using triggers, and here's how. Audit's trigger consists of four components. The first is a when component, which says when the trigger is evaluated. As you can see in the concrete example below, we can ask for evaluate a trigger when the request ends. The second component is the if condition that guards against or guards whether the trigger is actually activated. So some candidates could be if the request URL is like that and the average request latency of a request like that for the past minute is twice the average of a previous minute, we want to activate the trigger. But what metrics needs to be collected? That's answered by the log component, which asks audit to collect a series of metrics. For example, you can ask for arguments, return values. Then audit will use the until component to determine how long logging is deactivated before, how long logging persists before it's deactivated and goes back to the always-on tracing phase. For example, we can say if 10 minutes passed or if we have collected 5 samples. So the trigger is motivated by recent surveys on how developers log and what logging is useful. For example, with support for logging both good and bad requests, so it can help differential analysis. We can also provide streaming aggregates for performance metrics if they're specified in the trigger. Audit trigger will use dynamic instrumentation to flexibly collect data required for trigger evaluation. So we'll talk about more on this. Okay. Now that we have the key to when to log, it's time to figure out where in the code to actually start logging. In order to do this, audit will use a two-step solution. So the goal here is that if something goes wrong that throws exception, audit needs to understand what is the chain of cause that leads to that exception. If something goes slow, audit also needs to know what are a set of methods that are likely related to the problem. So audit will start with a dynamic invocation graph, a spaghetti graph like this, where each of the node is in a circle and the arrow represents invocation. So the first thing to notice here is that for a complex application, such a graph can be really huge, and logging everything is simply no-go for production. So the first step of pruning is to create what we call a request activity graph. Basically, all methods that are causally related to a request. Similarly, we want to do the same thing for exception. If exception happens, we need to know the exception chain, basically a set of methods from the root all the way to the exception side. Stack trace here falls short of what we want because stack trace only uncovers, only recovers the live methods on the stack. However, in this highly asynchronous world, many methods call each other asynchronously, as here, F1, F2, F3 are called asynchronously. So it would be better if we can have the whole chain of F1 through F4 instead of just F3 to F4. Audit can use existing causal tracing techniques to create request activity graph and exception chains with a combination of dynamic instrumentation, TLS, and metadata propagation. However, these techniques incur runtime overhead. Our experiment shows we can spend up to 8% of our overhead or our time just doing causal tracing. And we need to do this all the time because triggers needs to be evaluated all the time. So clearly, optimization needs to be done before this is suitable for production use. Audit noticed this emergent pattern called task asynchronous pattern, which allows developers to write asynchronous code in a synchronous manner using the idea of continuation. In fact, with TAP, Audit can leverage significant optimization that drastically lower the overhead of reconstructing a request activity graph and exception chain. I just want to emphasize the TAP represents an increasingly popular way of writing modern cloud applications and is widely available in all major frameworks and cloud providers such as EC2 and Azure. With TAP, Audit can reconstruct request activity graph and exception chains without using dynamic instrumentation. So here we omit a detail, but the high-level idea here is that when it comes to RAG, Audit can utilize asynchronous lifecycle event exposed by existing frameworks to piece together a RAG without using dynamic instrumentation. So these information, these events will contain limited information on the start and end of a task and their color information. Audit can utilize first chance exceptions, global exception handlers, inheritable TLS to passively reconstruct the asynchronous exception chain. That means this construction algorithm incurs zero overhead if there's no exception at all. Unfortunately, RAG and egg themselves are not enough because they themselves can be very big. So Audit will take the second step of doing another round of pruning to find the top blame methods. Here we propose what we call the critical blame metric, and it has two components. The first is that how do we rank methods when it comes to exception-related issues? So the natural step here to do is that method that are closer to the exception can kind of carry intuitively more information that's to do with the root cause. So Audit assign higher blame to methods closer to the exception. But what about performance? How do we rank performance from all the methods in a request activity graph if there's a performance issue? What methods are to blame? Before going into the detail, I would like to emphasize the intuition behind this metric. So critical blame, when it comes to performance, combines critical path analysis and normalized processor time. In that, we want to blame only tasks that are actively running, so consuming CPU cycles. We want tasks that are running together to share the blame. We want to focus on critical paths because that's a direct say on the latency. We also want to include non-critical path methods because sometimes we just can't change the methods on critical paths or because they are interfered with non-critical path methods. So here is an action, example in action. So the graph provided on the left is in the request activity graph. The x-axis represents time, y-axis represents different methods. So the solid line represents the task is active. The dotted line in the background represents time, the task that is waiting. So we first segment each of the requests into small time intervals. Each starts and ends with a lifecycle event. Here an example of task one, since it's running at both interval A and H, and in interval A, it's the only thing that's running. So it's gonna take the whole blame of A. In H, it's running with someone else, so it's gonna take the half the blame of H. We then traverse each and every one of these intervals, and then we'll arrive at a blame table like this on the right. So We then sort the blame table by the blame in a descending manner. Let's take an example of picking top two methods. We pick top two methods on the critical path with the highest blame. We then extend our inclusion to non-critical path methods that have at least interfered with one of the critical path method and whose blame is at least as high as the lowest chosen critical path methods. That sounds complicated, but the end result here is that if you say you want top two method, audit can actually pick more than two in the background. Okay, last, I would like to look at audit's effectiveness. We will start with its ability to root cause problems. So we have implemented audit for .NET and applied it to one production system in Microsoft and four high-profile open source libraries on GitHub. We're able to find 8 bugs or performance-related issues or exceptions that are previously unknown. So all these issues are acknowledged or already fixed on GitHub. As you can see, the results are summarized in the table. You can find audits quite handy when it comes to troubleshooting performance issues, such as lack of negative caching, contention with optimistic concurrency, bad content format, missed parallel opportunities, redundant method calls. Audit is also quite accurate or sensitive in picking out exception-related issues, such as surprise, if your website is generating thumbnails and suffixed by the resolution, the generated file names may be too long for your file system's taste, and the entire website can crash. And of course, exception issues related to concurrent edit failures. So for the details of the description of these issues, you can find them in the paper. Next, we can look at audit's effectiveness in terms of its critical blame ranking. So the idea here is that we studied a few code patterns usually found in cloud applications, including from left to right, the launch of homogeneous tasks, launch of heterogeneous tasks, launch of a task with a timeout, launch of a task with delay. So our study shows that when we compare all this critical blame to our baseline, which is normalized processor time, top critical methods, and iterative logical zeroing, all this critical blame is able to pick up more sensible bottlenecks when it comes to these widely used cloud patterns. For a detailed study of these, you can also find it in the paper. At last, we present audit's runtime overhead. Here we provide two numbers. The first is the raw overhead that's added by audit per method in order to operate. The second is audit's translated overhead when it comes to a real application. So the raw overhead is provided here in the table. Some highlights here, if we compare the second line, doing causal tracing with dynamic instrumentation versus doing causal tracing with our tap optimization, you can see you can lower the overhead of a per method calls from 90 microseconds to tens of microseconds. So this really highlights the benefit of doing tap optimization to lower the overhead. Another highlight here is that, as you can see, as we all know, that detailed logging takes a lot of time. So here, in fact, 90 or even more microseconds can be spent just for doing logging. So this calls out for the necessity and benefit of all this ability to accurately pinpoint only a small set of methods to start detail logging on for a practical use in production. As a result, audit's overhead will translate to negligible overhead in a real-world system, which is massive, a very popular ORM in .NET. Okay. Now I'd like to conclude. We just saw audit, which is a tool for troubleshooting transient and recurring errors with the technique of blame proportional logging. Audit allows developers to provide declarative triggers to talk about what metrics needs to be collected and define what it means for applications to go wrong without needing to worry about where in the code to do so. We have also shown that audit has negligible overhead for runtime for production use, and as well as its effectiveness in root causing previously unseen bugs. Okay, that's all from me. I'm glad to take feedbacks. Thank you.
If If you have questions, please use a microphone and introduce yourself.
Kurt Anderson, LinkedIn. Two questions. One is, you say that this helps you find unforeseen bugs, but given the necessity for the declaration of a trigger, it seems like it's actually only instances of bugs that you may not have been aware of, but you still have to be aware of the underlying problem condition.
So the question is, how do we write good triggers? Is that somewhat related?
Part of it's how do you write the triggers, but part of it's your terminology, because I would claim that because you've written a trigger, you had some anticipation that there was a bug.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. So the answer is that for the bugs we find, we have no idea what these applications are doing. So in order to lower the required domain knowledge, we start with just very general triggers. Actually, that's how we find these bugs. So we start with just performance triggers, very generic, okay. And then exception triggers, very generic, and then we can actually zoom in. Once we get to have a better understanding of what this application is doing, we can start refining our triggers. So start with the very general ones, and as the developers and operators get more and more knowledge, they can start refining the trigger. And okay. Right. So definitely, you're absolutely right that we can't get rid of all domain knowledge, but there's a way that we can take a gradual approach. As we know more and more about applications, we can write more specific triggers to target at specific problems.
Okay, great, that makes sense. The other question is, have you applied this to distributed systems, or is this strictly on box, hey, we've got the code in our hands and we can fiddle with it?
That's another very good question. So audit, in my point of view, is more like a login solution. So we can use whatever underlying causal tracing algorithm, such as pivot tracing, one of the state of the art, to actually work hand in hand with login. So we're solving the problem of where to log and when to log instead of solving how are we going to log. So all they can rely on, as you can see, many underlying mechanisms such as pivot tracing for distributed systems and other mechanisms as well. So I don't think that distributed tracing is a problem with audit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Barish from University of Michigan.
Hi.
Really useful work.
Thanks.
I'm wondering whether there's a way for you to infer what to log. So when you specify the predicate in the trigger, is it possible to automatically sort of know what to log rather than having this paragraph of very expressive description of what to log?
Yes. I don't know anything about that, but I guess machine learning.
Generic answer to anything.
Deeper learning. But at this point, we kind of require the developers to write these. So again, seems somewhat similar to the previous question. I mean, maybe you can start with general performance triggers. Just say if the performance is bad, try to figure out, get an idea what's running, and then take a zoom-in approach into deeper in the code and figure out what might be. There's currently no way to completely eliminate domain knowledge. Just say, well, this is a tool. Push the button, tells me everything.
That may be the future research. Yeah. Sure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dan Reisman, HPC at NIH. So with your logging, is it just point in time, or how does it deal with threads?
So we kind of abstracted straight away. So audit kind of assumes that the exceptions or performance issues are local to a request or a particular context. So if the context is able to spawn multiple threads, so usually you will pass the context across threads. So thread local storage or inheritable thread local storage. So we've been able to trace if the context spawns multiple threads, we're able to trace the threads. So it's kind of an implicit gain with this. Yeah.
So what about the information that occurs before the trigger is fired? How does that get pulled into the log?
That is a very good question. So audit kind of relies on this transiently recurring property of this problem. So if the problem happens only once, A, you probably don't want to log it because it's go away, it's not coming back. So audit will rely on the recurring property of a problem. So the first time it sees it, if it's captured by the trigger, we can start logging on them. So the second time they're there, we can collect information on them. So if they never happen, like you said, audit cannot help it with it. Some form could be Heisenbox, like audit will
Well, I'm more thinking like the information that occurs in that context right before the trigger fires. Like,
oh.
So how, do you lose that information or does it get
so,
buffered?
Yes. So that's where the continuous causal tracing comes from. So we don't lose the information. So the tracing is continuous, but the logging is transient. It's only transient. Sorry for the confusion. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Good paper.
Thank you.